Blog Talk Radio.
There's so many questions we have as we grow. It's hard to find answers to what we don't know. But sometimes there's someone to whom we can turn to teach us life lessons and to help us to learn just what's important and what matters most. Much more than our teacher, and we call them coach. Right there to guide us when we need a hand. They reach deep inside us and help us to stand. Lead by example in words and in deeds, and show us the courage we need to succeed. And I stand before you, and I'm proud to boast I'm one of the many who's learned from the coach. To never surrender your hopes or your dreams. And always remember, you've got to believe. Though trouble and hard times may well take their toll, wisdom, courage, and kindness is how you measure a soul. The road that you travel, the choices you make, the load that you carry, the chance take. We raise our glasses and offer this toast to one who will always be known as the coach. To one who will always be known.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
I'm Andrew Craig. I'm an investigative reporter and attorney based in Washington, and I've the author of Presidential Puppetry, Obama, Romney, and Their Masters. And I want to encourage everyone to support, listen to, and talk about the Carson's Corner show in New Jersey, which is a pioneering, courageous, and apt voice for progressives in New Jersey that I first came to know in 2009, when he was the pioneering and virtually unique media outlet willing to take on Chris Christie, dig deep, and look at how he had come to power and how he was misusing it. And 4 years, 5 years later here, that's all come to pass.
Hi, this is David K. Johnston, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Lamar Waldron, the author of Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy, those two books, the latter of which will become a movie produced and starring Leonardo DiCaprio in 2013. And you are listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour, and I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Greg Palast, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book Vultures Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores, and you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it too. I encourage you to listen.
And we are live here on Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson, and we are running in conjunction with the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. Pleased to have you with us here on this late-night edition of Carson's Corner. As I told you last week, or I've been posting on Facebook, we're going to be doing the political show now late in the evenings because it tends to run smoother. The last show went very, very smooth. I wouldn't say very smooth, but less rigid in terms of technical problems, in terms of audio problems. And so I think that may have something to do with the night, being that the website has less traffic and everything kind of has calmed down and whatnot. My name is Bob Carson. Pleased to be with you. And I hope that you will consider me your coach, right? That's why people tune into this show, because Bob Carson is the coach. That great song in the introduction, because I only phoned in about 2 minutes prior to the show. My Skype wasn't working and was having problems rebooting my computer, and it was a big disaster, so I couldn't start the show at exactly, or not exactly, but a little after 11, I had to play a song to get situated here and then play my intros and then go right into the live broadcasting. But I am the coach here, okay? We all have a coach in life that we go to for guidance, and this coach is a role model, and they show you how to do the right thing. And that's what I am to you, I'm telling you. Bob Carson is a coach, because if you're tired, if you're hungry, if you're poor, then you can understand that I've been through that and I go through that. So therefore, I am your role model, okay? There's just no question about that. I just got to give you an update on my situation, you know, before I go into my spiel, my rant here on my little soapbox. You know, it wouldn't be my life if I didn't have some complicating factor. This is common among, you know, poor people, people that are living almost in poverty, in, you know, bad living conditions, and really are almost in a sense victims to our economic policies, as, you know, everybody to a certain extent is. People have it easier than others. Some people, depending upon family, depending upon connections, and depending upon perhaps personal attributes. But it's not like Lyndon Johnson said that America, it's a race, and some people start at, you know, halfway mark. Some people start at the three-quarter mark, and other people's they start from the beginning, or maybe other people even start away from the finish line, you know, before the beginning. I think that that's what it comes down to. But it's not equal. It never will be. And the race could be sometimes made worse by our economic policies. But I have to get into, you know, my personal situation with my roommate and just tell you that the situation has gotten worse because my roommate, who is an alcoholic, just complete loser at life. I mean, literally, he spent time in Iraq. I think he spent 7-8 months in Iraq and was discharged from the military. I don't know what the problem was. And he's had a very, very difficult life. And he's chosen to, I mean, you know, his mother was a drug addict. His father was a drug addict. And so, you know, he's chosen to self-medicate by alcohol. Okay. And I'm telling you, folks, I talk to this guy till I'm blue in the face. I literally, you know, give him very tough advice and very tough criticism that nobody really else probably in his life has given him, as, you know, his parents or his mother certainly has been enabling him. But, you know, it reaches a certain point where it doesn't even matter anymore. You know, why even bother? Because ultimately he has to help himself. And so he came by last weekend, and I actually ended up driving him to his father's grave at like 12 o'clock in the morning when he was drunk. He couldn't even give me the right directions. It was embarrassing. And he got me lost, and I threatened to turn around because he just kept on getting me lost, and it was really aggravating. But, you know, during this conversation and even before that, he had told me that, you know, he wanted to move, live closer to his mother, of course, so she can bail him out. And he wanted to, he was going to, wasn't going to do anything right away, wasn't going to get an apartment right away. He was going to pay the back rent that he owes here and then get out of the lease and then go live in an apartment or go live with his mother and then go from there. Well, he calls me up maybe 5 or 6 days ago, and he tells me that he got an apartment down there. He's getting kicked out of his mother's and his mother's boyfriend's apartment, and he's got an apartment down there. Of course, they're giving him money for the security deposit and everything like that. They're probably going to give him furniture and whatnot. And this really pissed me off because, you know what? He's not going to be able to pay his back rent. There's just no way. This guy can't even afford what he's paying here. He's going to pay his rent and pay me back and pay the electricity back. So now I have no roommate whatsoever. I've nobody to split the rent with. I put an ad on Craigslist, and you know, one person responded. Actually, another person responded too. But, you know, it's really it's gotten worse on account of his behavior. But, you know, it's almost to be expected from someone like that. And I just wanted to update you. So if you know anybody that's looking for a room to rent, looking for a roommate, please refer him to me, okay? Bob Carson, facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. Okay, what do we got here today? You know, I got an interesting quote from Noam Chomsky that I want to talk about. I actually posted it in the chat room, okay? So if you can go there, you could check it out. That came from posted from my good friend Brad Hullhut of Pinko the Bear Radio. You can also check out Brad's show on the commonsprojectnetwork.com. Good stuff from Brad. He's one of my mentors, really. He's phenomenal. In fact, I just ordered a book that he recommended. I think it's called Understanding Socialism. There's a foreword by Howard Zinn. A very, very interesting book. And so I'm starting to read more about the history of socialism and the Russian Revolution, understanding socialism a little better, because socialism is taken for granted by Americans. We love socialism here in America. We do. It's true. You know, we love our socialist police departments, our socialist fire departments, our socialist military, our socialist roads, socialist ambulatory services, socialist Medicare, it goes down the line. Socialism is pervasive in our society. But what is maybe equally pervasive, if not more, is fascism. And fascism in America is on the rise. And that's one of the main themes of the show, is just, you know, telling you that basically this is what's going on, okay? This is where America's headed, and we have to stop it. We have to really do. And a good illustration of this is the need for political parties to basically bow down to billionaires. And it's not just the Republican Party. I mean, you know, I told you before that the Republican Party is basically bordering on complete fascism. This is a party that would abolish the National Labor Relations Board, okay, would eliminate child labor protections. In fact, some candidates for president, some Republican governors have even suggested doing so. This is a party that would, you know, further deregulate big business and put them more in control over our lives, would get rid of any of the countervailing institutions. This, coupled with extreme nationalism, okay, you know, extreme military spending and erosion of the countervailing institutions that I often talk about, and we'd have under this guise a complete corporate system, a complete corporate state, the commingling between business and the state, and the capture of the state from business. And this doesn't require a violent revolution. This requires what we're seeing right now. You know, I talked about this last week, the personhood, the corporate personhood now, corporations having more power than all of us, having more, just a unlimited amount of resources to write our laws, to interpret our laws, to, you know, affect our laws, to implement our laws. I mean, fill in the blank. It's just down the line. And we're seeing this now with a handful of GOP hopefuls kissing the ring of Sheldon Adelson, the casino mogul out in Las Vegas, who's worth a ridiculous amount of money, hundreds of billions of dollars. In fact, last election, this guy spent $100 million of his own money, and it was nothing. It was the equivalent of you know, maybe $47, or they did some sort of calculation just to illustrate just how little the amount of money is to this man, and whatnot. And what's important to, and I mean, the last year's presidential election, over $1 billion was spent on each side. And here's how you know we're in trouble, and this is not just pertaining to one political party. You know, President Obama last year got over $1 billion, okay? And President Obama, even though he ran against Mitt Romney, the creature from Bain Capital, President Obama actually got more private donations from Bain Capital people, from Bain people. Isn't that amazing? Is that, you know, if you look at people who work for Bain Capital, they actually donated more to Obama's campaign than they did Mitt Romney. And what do they get in turn for that? You know, what does their donation buy them? Well, you know, you look at Obama's position on corporate taxes. President Obama wants to lower corporate taxes. In fact, as Paul Street pointed out on the Black Agenda radio podcast with Glenn Ford and Nellie Bailey, Paul Street pointed out that President Obama was in front of a room full of CEOs, Wall Street executives, and Obama laughed at the idea that he was some sort of a socialist and you know, bragged about his pro-business reforms and policies. And it's just, you know, it's just a joke. It really is. And what this says to Americans, what this says to the average voter out there, if you do vote, in this toxic political environment, is that this man, Sheldon Adelson, a billionaire, is more important than you. You know, he's more important than, you know, a million constituents, because he has the money. And in Washington, D.C., it's he who has the gold rules. And it's really unfortunate. And it shows you that the Republican Party And again, I this is not relegated to just one political party here, but the Republican Party is not interested in courting the votes of, you know, individuals that don't have money. They're not spending their time, you know, talking to people in soup kitchens or shelters or whatnot. They're going to the power players, the individuals that have the money to bankroll their candidacies. And as we've noted on the show before, political donations are the best investments people can make, because for a billionaire like Sheldon Adelson or the Koch brothers or any of the other, you know, right-wing billionaires who have immersed themselves in our political process, if you invest $100 million in a politician, if you buy politicians, which these individuals have mastered, they've mastered the art of politicians, then you get that money tenfold in the form of tax breaks, in the form of subsidies, in the form of indirect subsidies, in the form of dismantling labor, deregulation, you know, fill in the blank. And that's why they spend the money. That's why these corporations and these mega billionaires spend the money, because it's a great political investment. And now, you know, you look at what the Koch brothers are doing, and the Koch brothers are the principal backers of the Tea Party. David Koch ran for president in 1980 on a libertarian platform, and they really are the power brokers in our society. I mean, we are much more closer to a libertarian paradise than we are a socialist paradise, and that is in large part due to the efforts of the Koch brothers, who have nullified elections. They've nullified regulatory agencies, and they've nullified the vote. I mean, you look at what these guys are doing to try to limit the minority vote in Republican-controlled state houses and basically make the you know, voting bloc all white, the voters all white, so they can win elections that way. These two guys and many others like them who are also libertarian, and there's no shortage of right-wing libertarian billionaires out there, they're controlling everything. They're calling the shots here, okay? And how do we know that? What has Obama done since he's gotten elected? In fact, what has this man done for the last 5 or 6 years? He's cut spending. He's cut spending dramatically, okay? He brags in front of Wall Street that, you know, he has pro-business policies. He creates a model for austerity to the point where his own, you know, individuals that he appointed to that Simpson-Bowles Commission, they recommended raising the retirement age. So President Obama has endorsed the idea of raising the retirement age, raising it to 69, maybe 70. And you look at the average black man in America, he lives to what, 69? So, you know, in President Obama's America, which is essentially the same thing as David Koch's America, on core issues, I would argue, a black man would be working until he's 69 years old. Okay, that's where we're headed, because, you know, this is what the elites in our society want. This is what is being done in Washington, D.C. at the behest of the political elite in America, where we have to focus on austerity, we have to focus on deficit reduction, because that's what they want us to focus on. Never mind the fact that, you know, a majority of Americans favor raising the minimum wage. Never mind the fact that a majority of Americans want the legal right to unionize in the workplace. Never mind the fact that we're in favor of raising taxes on the very wealthy and corporations. None of that matters, because these billionaires are running our society. Their interests are the starting point for negotiations. We talk about a guy like Paul Ryan. Now, Paul Ryan was rejected by the voters, okay, in 2012. He's His ideas are completely rejected. The idea of privatizing Medicare, privatizing Social Security, his tax plan, which would amount to over a $4 trillion giveaway to the very wealthy. I mean, I could just go on and on and on. His ideas serve as the starting point for negotiations on everything, on poverty, on tax policy, on economic policy. It's all Paul Ryan. That's what it is. And it goes to show you where we're at in America. And, you know, we need to get to a point in this country where billionaires as being thieves, as being, you know, part of the ruling class that are robbing from the rest of us. And, you know, Tom Hartman points this out in his new book, The Crash of 2016, where, you know, it used to be in America where billionaires, the uber rich, were afraid to walk the streets to do their little publicity stunts, because the American public was so angry at them for what they caused, you know, the pain and the suffering that people went through after the Great Depression. And, you know, you had Herbert Hoover that really didn't do anything. He let the so-called market work. He had a hands-off approach. And really, that's been the equivalent of Barack Obama. President Obama has done nothing to change the fundamentals of the economy. He's let the so-called market do its work. And that leads me to the Noam Chomsky quote that I'm going to read for you, because I think it's very, very important that we analyze, you know, everything that we can in this quote. So I'm going to read you the quote real quick here, and then I'm going to analyze certain parts of the quote. Noam Chomsky writes, "It's all working quite well for the rich and powerful. In the U.S., for example, tens of millions are unemployed, unknown millions have dropped out of the workforce in despair, and incomes as well as conditions of life have largely stagnated or declined. But the big banks, which were responsible for the latest crisis, are bigger and richer than ever. Corporate profits are breaking records. Wealth beyond the dreams of avarice is accumulating among those who count. Labor severely weakened by union busting and growing worker insecurity, to borrow the term of Alan Greenspan used in the explaining the grand success of the economy he managed." Well, first of all, he's absolutely correct here. I'm a big supporter of Noam Chomsky's, and I really, really talk about his propaganda model and how it explains the inherent corporate bias in our media. And if you get a chance, you can go over to YouTube and just type in Noam Chomsky liberal media, and you'll see this great documentary featuring Edward Herman, featuring Justin Lewis and Noam Chomsky, explaining how our corporate media is reflects the interests of the elites, and the various filters of propaganda are used to manipulate the general public into getting them to accept, you know, policies that are against their best interests. But we know it's working out quite well for the rich and powerful, because since the 2008 collapse, the very rich and powerful have gotten all of the income growth. Now, this has really been the case over the past 30-plus years, where the top 1% of income earners have gotten a ridiculous amount of income growth. I mean, some estimates have it as high as almost 400%. You know, if you look at the top 1% of income earners, you look at someone that's making maybe, you know, $1 million in 1980, what is that person making now? You know, you could look at a bond trader that was making, you know, a decent amount of money in the 1980s, and now, you know, in 2008, or, you know, 2014, but from 2008, maybe even before that with the deregulation of Wall Street, that bond trader is probably a millionaire. And, you know, so you could look at CEO pay, where, you know, when Reagan came into office, the CEO pay was about 30-1. And now that disparity has just increased tenfold. Yeah, so now the average CEO is making anywhere from 250 to 500 times the lowest paid worker. We've created just an elite cast of CEOs that are essentially gamblers and are being rewarded by our corrupt, corrosive economic system here in America. And it's all by design. I mean, nothing. There's no such thing as a free market. And so these billionaires or these very wealthy are getting all of the income growth and all of the wealth accumulation as a result of our orchestrated economic policies and nothing else. And again, the very wealthy recovered. The big banks are just bigger than they were before the 2008 collapse. So not only did nobody go to jail, not only did President Obama not even challenge the CEO compensation after these bloodsuckers destroyed the economy, okay, and you know, bankrupted millions of people and killed millions of people. They're murderers as far as I'm concerned, because the human cost of the 2008 collapses is immeasurable. But their businesses have grown. They become more powerful. And it's one of the themes that Tom Hartman speaks about in his book, 2016, the coming crash, because now these banking derivatives are larger than before. They're in unregulated markets, and everything is still tied together so that when they go down, we go down. And you know what? Here's something very, very interesting. It's what Americans need to know, is that we continue to subsidize these banks. 3 cents out of every dollar we send to Washington, D.C. in federal taxes goes to the banks so they can lend us our money. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that a great deal? I mean, could you imagine if 3 cents out of every dollar goes to something like welfare or goes to, you know, I mean, just fill in the blank. No, this is inherent bias. It is classism in our system. It really is. And so on that front, you know, he's absolutely right, Noam Chomsky. It's working quite well for the rich and powerful. And this is why we're seeing manifestations of, you know, political unrest. The Tea Party, which is a fascist, racist movement, similar to what we're seeing in the Ukraine. Okay, we've spoken at length about the Tea Party and exactly what these people are. And if you want to learn more about the inherent racism within the Tea Party, you can read Paul Street's book, Crashing the Tea Party. Paul Street and Anthony DiMaggio. It's one of the first scholarly books, analysis into the Tea Party. It's amazing stuff. It really is. And then you have the Occupy protests, which have been largely broken up by the state, as we've seen. There really isn't an Occupy movement per se, I would say. But nonetheless, there is political unrest at the growing disparity between the rich and the poor. And that's not going away. That's only going to, I think, increase. You know, we're seeing this with worker struggles. We're seeing this with fast food strikes and just, you know, a mass movement of people scattered around this country responding to our, you know, disgusting economic policies. And so this is happening right now. We're becoming we are an extremely polarized society with great wealth and income consolidation, more so than what we saw, you know, prior to the Great Depression of 1929. And it's impacting our society because, as in the Spirit Level book with, I think it's Kate Pickett and Lawrence Wilkerson, I believe, are the authors. They chronicle what happens when you have an extremely unequal society. And so that's continuing in America. Not only is it continuing, it's getting worse as we're moving closer towards fascism. Then Noam Chomsky goes on to write, for example, tens of millions are unemployed. Unknown millions have dropped out of the workforce in despair, and incomes as well as conditions of life have largely stagnated or declined. Now, he's absolutely correct about this, that there's no question about this. And you know, part of the reason why we have a huge pool of labor out there is because this is what the business interests want. Okay, the very wealthy, those that It's working quite well for it. The rich and powerful, as Noam Chomsky points out. They have arranged our economy to the point where they can get mind-boggling amounts of wealth. They can do whatever they want without having to invest in American businesses and without having to pay taxes. Without, you know, basically, these people hate America. Corporate America hates America. They hate the American worker. They take the American worker for granted. They love profits. They love to use our commons, you know, the police department, the socialist police department I spoke about, the socialist fire department, the ambulances, the court cases, which, you know, our court system is completely clogged with corporations protecting their assets. And, of course, as you can imagine, in a country moving towards fascism, most of the court decisions rendered in America are from Republican judges and benefit big business. It's just a mind-boggling amount of time. So that speaks to the legitimacy of our court systems. Okay, they want unemployment. They want worker uncertainty. Alan Greenspan said it when he was the head of the Federal Reserve. This man was head of the Federal Reserve for something like 18 or 19 years. And what he said is that the number one function of the Federal Reserve is to create a certain level of worker insecurity, you know, meaning that when unemployment reaches a certain level, by historical standards, a low unemployment rate, maybe around 5 or 6%, you raise interest rates because you that's too low, and that puts an upwards pressure on wages. And so, you know, it's easier to revive an economy or to stop an economy from growing by raising the interest rates than it is to spur economic growth by lowering interest rates. And that's the number one function of the Federal Reserve, is to keep workers uncertain, because inflation hurts businesses. It doesn't hurt workers. I mean, we've been printing money since 2008. We've been printing tens of trillions of dollars, and still, prices are relatively the same. Well, you can argue the consumer price index is inherently flawed, and we need to redo it. But you know what? It's not, inflation is not our problem. You know, we need printing of money as the population expands. All right. But the printing of money, the way that the Federal Reserve and the interests of the Federal Reserve and the very structure of the Federal Reserve is inherently anti-worker, and that's really part of the problem, is that, you know, the very wealthy benefit from us having a high level of unemployment, because that drives down wages. And that's the goal of corporate America, is to make as much money as they can. And we accept this as being in the public good. And so that's why you have millions of people unemployed. There's no manufacturing anymore. You know, the so-called free market forces, the Reagan Revolution and whatnot, destroyed our manufacturing sector. Manufacturing means that you need people to do work. You need workers. You need to rely on workers. The elites in our society have contempt for American workers. They hate American workers, okay, and they view them as an inconvenience. And this is how the corporate media, you know, reports it. I spoke about the Noam Chomsky propaganda model. Well, you know, one of the things that you see from our corporate media is this utter contempt for organized labor. The only time, you know, labor gets reported on in America is when they're doing something to inconvenience big business. You know, you can look at any newspaper, you can turn on any cable news channel, and you'll see nonstop reporting on, you know, corporate profits, rates of inflation, blah, 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 this, that stock, this stock, earnings, third quarter, all these artificial yardsticks that don't have any effect to our lives, and they only pertain to the top 1%, where the vast majority of us are workers. The vast majority of us make money through a paycheck and a wage, and therefore our interests count for nothing in our corporate media. Okay, it's so we know that the elites in our society hate American workers. The more unemployed people out there, the more money they make. And again, they've set up an economy right now, a global economy, to where they can invest their money anywhere. They can park trillions of dollars offshore. They could, send factories, send production, engage in intertrade, where they set up one company across the seas and they re-import their own product back into America using slave labor and diluting the workforce. And this is what America's become, okay? And then Chomsky goes on to say, and incomes as well as conditions of life have stagnated or declined. This goes back to what I was saying earlier, all the problems that income inequality and living in an extremely unequal society present. We have the highest rate of the prison population in America. You know, companies make money. They trade their stocks on the stock market. They make money by locking people up. Okay, we have something like 25% of the world's prison population. It's really, really disgusting. We have the highest rate of childhood disease. We have the highest rate of infant mortality, the highest murder rate. Okay, we have the highest rates of crime. This is when you compare our society to other industrialized countries. And again, these are all responses, I would say, to our economic system in America. You know, one of the things that the right wing does is, many things, but the use of race to justify poverty, the use of race to justify income inequality, takes place all the time, where, you know, when we hear about African Americans on the right wing news channels, we hear about how it's a culture of poverty. It's the gangster rap culture. It's the fact that supposedly 70% of out of wedlock children, black children, are born out of wedlock, and this and that. Well, these are all responses to poverty. These are all products of, you know, an economic system that breeds poverty, and prosperity is for the far and few between. That's the living conditions that have stagnated or declined. And you know, this is true with it's not just the black community. It's all communities. You know, according to CNN, you have 75% of Americans that are living paycheck to paycheck. Okay, that is, I would submit to you that if you're living paycheck to paycheck, then, you know, your conditions are probably not stellar. Okay, I'm telling you my living conditions and explaining what the hell's going on with me. Well, I'm not too far from what the average American is going through. You know, the problems that I'm experiencing right now, debt, you know, home insecurity, okay, transportation insecurity, job insecurity, medical insecurity, fill in the blank, they are symptoms of an economic system that has gone awry, okay? And this is what you have in America right now. This is the country that we're living in, where, you know, look at student loan debt. Look at other indicators, and it's suffocating people like me. It really is. And this is forcing us to submit to employment and essentially become slaves in an economic system that is completely out of control. And Chomsky goes on to write, but the big banks, which are responsible for the latest crisis, are bigger and richer than ever. Corporate profits are breaking records. Wealth beyond the dreams is accumulating among those who count labor severely weakened by union busting. He's absolutely correct. You know, these corporations that are making record profits, they're making record profits by, in part, not paying taxes. That's part of the thing here. And so we have this system now where we have a tax code that's ballooned up to over 70,000 pages, okay? And this tax code is written for and by the very wealthy. It's a complete junket, okay? And it's really the core of our democracy, and it shows you that the United States tax code, it really is a great representative of how just dysfunctional our democracy is and how corrupt everything is. It can explain, you know, just about everything, I think. It illustrates everything that is wrong with this country. And so these corporations that are not paying taxes, these corporations that, again, rely on the commons, okay, burden our commons, burden our infrastructure, they're making record profits. And they're doing this at the expense of the American worker. They're doing this at the expense of this country. But since they own the media, you're not going to get an analysis of this. Since they own the media, you're going to be told that corporate profits are good. They're good for America, right? We have to, these are the yardsticks that we have to measure our society by, you know, corporate earnings, GDP, this, that, the other thing. Everything centers around corporate profits, even though these corporate profits are coming at the expense of you and I, coming at the expense of, you know, everybody in our country. And somebody once said, a wise man in one of the documentaries, Ethos, that was narrated by Woody Harrelson, said that corporations are monsters trying to gobble up as much profit as they can. And they've managed to do so. They have managed to take control over our country. And so if we're going to, you know, reverse this, we have to wage war on corporations. We have to essentially neutralize them through unionization, through taxation, through regulation. All these words that are just, you know, politically unspeakable to our politicians for obvious reasons, okay? But would you expect corporate profits to be suffering in you know, with our current form of capitalism? I don't think so. Again, this is all by design. Would you expect wealth accumulation not to occur under these circumstances? I don't think so. You know, and it's really unfortunate. And Chomsky points out labor is severely weakened by union busting. You know, I've said this before on the show, is as we move closer towards fascism in this country, you're not even going to be able to mention the word union. People are going to be thrown in jail for being members of unions in America. Unions have been just obliterated over the past, you know, 30 plus years. It all started probably, I mean, you know, you could say it started with Taft-Hartley and the creation of right-to-work laws, right-to-work states and others. And ever since then, as Joe Burns pointed out on the show, workers have been fighting the fight with their arms tied behind their back. And now we have a system of labor control. But it's only getting worse. It's only getting worse. This, you can go back to the 1970s, 1978, with union busting measures put into law. The you know, corporate America's response to Ralph Nader and his book, the David Koch's 1980, David Koch runs for office, starts investing in these right-wing fascist you know, think tanks and others, and now you've got a steady stream of corporate right-wing propaganda that infects anybody who's sitting in a traffic jam, infects anybody who's watching Fox News, and people that don't even watch Fox News that have to be inundated with this propaganda from the zombies that do. And all of this has led to the obliteration of unions, and now public sector unions, they're going to be a thing of the past. You mark my words. Public sector unions in America They serve as one of the last countervailing institutions. They're going to be obliterated, folks, because it's a threat to the elites, because the business interests of America want there to be no unionization. They want there to be no pushback, no pesky regulations, no pesky minimum wage laws, no bargaining, pensions. Forget about it. You're lucky to have a goddamn job. You're lucky to breathe the same air that they do. You're lucky to be in the same country as they are. This is how these sick people feel. I'm not over-exaggerating. I'm not being dramatic here. This is how these people feel. This is how they think. This is what they believe. It's sick. It's frightening. But this is where the elites are. This is where David Koch and his band of fascist libertarians are. Okay? So, of course, they've weakened unions. You can't even join a union in America. It's illegal. These companies spend hundreds of billions of dollars, or maybe not that much, but they spend billions of dollars, these anti-union, right-wing corporate law firms, spend billions of dollars to affect unionization in America. Now, why does corporate America invest that money? They invest that money because they realize that organized labor is a threat to their power. It's a threat to their profits. It's the bottom line. And so under a country like this, you'd expect workers to be completely immobilized, and that's what's happening right now. And it's going to happen. It's going to get worse. Mark my words, no matter who gets into the White House, no matter what election is around the corner, the weakening of labor in America is just going to get worse. I'm telling you, we're going to see an abolishment of the National Labor Relations Board. They already have basically abolished it by not funding it, by appointing appointees. These legal mechanisms that the corporate interests can employ to nullify regulatory agencies that I spoke about earlier. It's completely, the National Labor Relations Board is a joke in itself because it's been infiltrated. It's been corrupted by money and power, and so it's supposed to preside over the workforce, but what good is it? Because just like everything else in America, it's rotten to its core, And so this is to be expected. And, as unions get further eroded, you're going to see more and more corporate profits, more and more polarization, more and more, voter ID laws and everything. And David Harvey, the great professor, says the decisions that are going to guide us in the future are just the only so-called democracy that we're going to have is at the local level, where, if you want to vote to put a tree in your neighborhood, if you want to vote for, some other, meaningless act, you can. But the big decisions are going to be, micromanaged by the elites, by the powerful interests in America, the banks, the world banks, the banksters, people, the Federal Reserve. That's what's happening in America, a complete circumventing of our democracy. And so this is to be expected. This is what's happening. This is what's coming down the pike right now. Okay, and this is why you have organizations like Fox News, a fascist terrorist organization that is dedicated to a complete corporate state. This is why you have right-wing talk radio to, use race bait, and get us closer to a corporate state. This is why you have these right-wing fascist think tanks to, give credence to fascism and pump the airwaves with misinformation to dupe Americans into accepting this. And it's as Malcolm X said, and I said it on this show last week, if you're not careful, you'll let the oppressor allow you to hate the oppressed and love him, love thyself. I'm mangling the quote, but that's the essence of what Malcolm X said, is that, you know, the corporate media, those that own the media, they'll get you to hate yourself. They'll get you to hate your neighbor, your brother, and love the oppressor, which is them, which is the people I speak of on this show. And so it's a very, very grim picture for America. Okay, it's one, unfortunately, it's not going away anytime soon. We're going to experience several decades like this. I mean, we're not even close to the type of revolution that is needed to get back our institutions and purify them and get rid of the fascist corporate filth that exists. Get back to a point where we could throw a piece of garbage like David Koch or any one of these billionaires in jail. We can look at their mega mansions as a crime against humanity. We can, you know, rally the American public and get them to the point where, you know, Fox News and the fascist message that they pump out, it's akin to, you know, white supremacy. That's what we have to do. We have to recognize that this is a dangerous ideology that needs to be contained, and we need to, you know, get control of our government and have a government by and for the people. We the people. It's very, very important stuff here. But again, you know, this is going to go a long way. I'm telling you, it sucks to be an American. It really does. This is a really, really bad time to live in this country. And it's not getting better. You and I are just have to suffer. It really comes down to that. It's just we're going to be in a constant state of suffering in this godforsaken country. All right, we're almost out of time here. I just want to tell you how you can follow me. You can friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. You can also follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. I want to encourage you to check out some of the shows on the Commons Project Network. You can go to the commonsprojectnetwork.com and see some great shows. They've added some really, really good shows there over the past week or so. You've got this Citizen Radio by, I want to say, Allison and Jamie Kilkenny. Really, really cute couple out of New York City, very active politically. And I know that they had a relationship with Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks, and they have a very, very good, very professional radio show. Very, very well received, too. I mean, they're very, very popular. And I think they just started to post on the Commons Project Network. Also, there's some talk about getting Cindy Sheehan and her show on the website. That would be absolutely phenomenal. Cindy Sheehan is a fabulous, fabulous activist. Very intelligent lady, very, very passionate. And, you know, I mean, she lost a lot with the loss of her son, Casey, due to these forces that I'm talking about. You know, she's been marginalized by corporate media, even, you know, going back to the Iraq War. But I'm telling you, she's a real, real beacon. She really is. That'd be an absolute honor to be aside her on the commonsprojectnetwork.com. So you got a lot of stuff going on there. It's growing. It really is. And you need to get over there because you're not going to find too many other places where there's this type of media assembled. It's media for and by the people. So that's really it. So thank you very much for joining this edition of Carson's Corner. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.